step off into hour number two. Clifford Carnicom is here. We're talking about aerosol spraying over the United States and many other countries as well. Okay, Clifford, let's proceed.
Thank you very much, Jeff. You know, the point of the preceding discussion when we enumerated the various agendas that are consistent with the data, of which there is now seven, the point of that discussion was that until the basis for each one of those agendas is completely dismissed, and that basis being established by now years of research and many, many, many papers being written, until the basis for each of those seven motivations is dismissed or refuted, it is not plausible or reasonable for me, as an analyst, to predict or conjecture that these operations are going to terminate.
Right.
As long as the basis exists, there is every reason to think that these operations shall continue. I of course, hope that that's not the case.
Well,
but that's what the data says.
Look, in all reality, they who would manipulate this planet to their own ends see the atmosphere as a fabulous opportunity and enterprise, and they're not about to turn away from it. Neither of us can probably adequately imagine what they're planning or what their distant scientific applications may be for our atmosphere. There are all kinds of things, electromagnetic, chemical, you name it.
And, you know, and that's seven, and, you know, who knows if my seven encompass
right.
all that is really planned, but it's what I've been able to come up with. And, you know, from this standpoint, I could introduce a biological aspect to this that wipes out just about everybody in the face of the earth, and unfortunately the other six still exist.
Right.
So that was just my comment that I'm a little bit cautious and careful of entering the predictive mode. It's been attempted many times. I wish any individual that attempts it to have luck, but it's not what I see right now until the basis is eliminated.
Right.
And along the way, it's appropriate now to give a thanks to all those people that they've been trying hard. And I sometimes come off as a person that just doesn't necessarily see light at the end of the tunnel on this one. But I really do want to thank all the people that are trying. There are people trying, and they're trying on and on and on in the same way that I have. And I don't ever want to discourage that sense of activism and hope, because
right.
it is that drive that is going to place an end here at some point. Or if justice is sought, it's that drive that's going to make that happen. And whether it takes 50 years or we see it in our lifetime, I don't know where that's going to be. But I really do want to thank all the folks that are helping. I get, you know, you'll have people that just out of the blue, they just, you know, their whole lives have been affected for a long time now. And they haven't given up either, and I won't either. It's just that I'm saying it has to go to a whole new level now in terms of organized pressure, as we're now starting to see in some ways, at least, on the political scene, where you have certain forces of evil that eventually are hopefully held to accountability. But it's not going to happen unless we do try. And so I just want to thank those people that have, and not to have any note that
right.
that tries to repudiate their the efforts that are being made. The next topic I wanted to bring up is also a response to an article that you posted. Again, I have not seen this article anywhere else. I always do thank you for your diversity and interest in seeking news and information from just the broadest variety of sources possible.
Thank you.
This was a very interesting article to me, and I thought we might spend a little bit of time on it.
Indeed.
And the title of the article was Skepticism Greets Claim of Possible Alien Microbes. And this comes from some outfit called World Science, and I actually need to do some research on them. You may know something about them. I don't yet, but I'd eventually like to trace down maybe who it is that's doing this type of reporting here, because it's certainly very interesting. And I won't read much, but I thought I'd read about three or four sentences out of this to capture the highlights of what caught my attention when you posted this article. This is an article that describes research that was done by the Mahatma Gandhi University, some researchers there in India. And I'll summarize, and then I'll read just a couple lines from it. And what the research describes is the detection of some very unusual, no other way of saying it, very unusual cellular structures coming from, and let's call it an airborne or outside source, either airborne, atmospheric, or cosmic source, coming into the planet. And these cellular structures are extremely unusual and are completely unidentified. They don't know what they are at all. And the work was done in a serious enough fashion that it has been approved for publication in a scientific journal coming out of, I assume that's coming out of India. I have to get that name of the journal. But it's passed the test, in other words.
Right.
The peer review, and you have this article coming out in a relatively mainstream scientific journal. Here's a couple of lines from this article that caught my interest. The opening is, a paper to appear in a scientific journal claims a strange red rain might have dumped microbes from space onto Earth 4 years ago. But the report is meeting with a shower of skepticism from scientists who say extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof, and this one hasn't got it. That's one line. Another line in here was interesting to me. It says the things look like cells, at least superficially, and no one is sure what they are. And then in the second page of the article, they raise the prospect, well, I need a source for this stuff. You know, this stuff is coming from up above down onto us, and we don't know what it is, so I need a source. So they postulate the idea that these structures may have come from outer space. And so it introduces into a scientific journal the idea, which has been done before to some extent. It's not entirely new, but this is at a little bit more serious level, I think, because they have the cellular structures. They can show them to you.
Mm-hmm.
But they basically raise a prospect that, well, maybe this stuff came from outer space, a meteor. And so that idea is gaining increased confirmation and credibility in our popular scientific community, and that is, oh, maybe life could have come from somewhere outside the Earth and affected us in some way. So, you know, that makes it into the scientific journal here, which is probably the little teaser or opening for the scientific community so that they can debate that idea. And the last line of this caught my interest, too. Oh, here's one that's going to be very difficult to explain no matter who we are. I just caught this right before we were on the air, and that is the amount of material they saw. I don't have any interpretation to that actually right now yet, but they're talking about 55 tons. Their estimate of the amount of material that has come in related to this is
right.
Up to 55 tons.
That's
pretty astounding.
It sure is.
And so I have a hard time, no matter where we go with this discussion, in terms of the amount of information or amount of materials we're talking about. This last paragraph is pretty darn interesting to me also. Here's what they said. They said, alive or dead, the particles have some staying power, if the paper is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Even after storage in the original rainwater at room temperature without any preservative for about 4 years, no decay or discoloration of the particles could be found.
It's unprecedented.
And if I didn't mention at the beginning, you know, what happened here, they found these cellular structures in rainwater and, I believe, lake water also, if I remember that right, scarlet showers. They were talking about red rain, and I believe they also talked about a lake, but I don't see that. Now, when I saw this paper, it simply caught, wait. One, really, I don't think I read this line to you. This is sort of the crux of this whole thing. I don't think I got this one right. The new paper includes a chemical analysis of the particles, a description of their appearance under microscopes, and a survey of where they fell.
Mm-hmm.
it assesses various explanations for them and concludes that the specks, which vaguely resemble red blood cells, might have come from a meteor.
This is fascinating, and when I saw that story, I did some research on strange biological particles falling from the sky, and as you well know, there are a number of stories detailing instances of just that. Western Washington State, I think the town was Oak Hill or Oakdale, had a fall of biological matter sprayed over the town, which very much looked like red blood cells, the same thing. I don't think we need to go off planet for an explanation of where this stuff may have come.
Well, that's where our discussion is going tonight, also, right. Between you and me.
Back in a couple minutes. Don't go away. Oakville, Washington, 1994, human white blood cells. And that's not the only instance of blood cells falling from the sky and other strange organic biological matter. No, not toilet dumps from airliners. This is something entirely different. Please go ahead, Clifford.
Thank you very much, Jeff. When I saw this article that you posted, my first response was that I wanted to try and contact this university and simply, let's say, give them a referral to the research that has been done, because
right.
I wrote probably over 2 years, I probably wrote at least a half a dozen papers basically describing the detection of what I have to regard as extremely unusual cellular structures coming from atmospheric samples. Through a combination of methods, there are three methods I used before it was over. I used HEPA filters, I used electrostatic precipitation, and I used rainwater tests. And I simply wanted to refer them to the work I had done. And when I sent that email, which I collected their address from their university website, when I sent that email, it was rejected. I don't know why. Maybe they simply have a bad email address listed on their site. And I sent it through two different methods. And the email was rejected. But I still felt it was necessary at least to sort of give them a referral to this research. So I wrote a public statement on this, basically trying to make my response on this public. And I'm going to read just a couple sentences of that with your permission. And then the other thing I did was contact you at that point.
Right.
Because I'm aware of your perceptiveness on these issues. And I was curious as to whether or not, you know, you might be making some of the same connections that I was in my own mind about the potential linkage of this research being done over in India and that which had been reported and described in great detail on numerous occasions in this country. And by the way, that was one heck of a hot button when that topic came up. Uh-huh. You know, the first time that my work showed these unusual structures, which fairly early in the game I had to describe. The sentence I kept using was, the best visual identification that can be made at this time is that of an erythrocyte. Even the word red blood cell is so highly charged to people that I would use a technical term to simply try and diffuse the absolute astounding nature of what it was that was being spoken of here, to even consider that possibility. of an organic material of that nature in the atmosphere is really a hot issue to people, and brings up a lot of distress and anger on the emotional side. So I wrote this response to the university, and this is what I said. I said, and this is directed to those researchers, and I directed them to my website, and I said, please pay attention to the numerous articles on the detection of aerosolized cellular structures in airborne samples. Best analysis thus far appears to involve a desiccated form of erythrocyte, and there may be also an association with stem cells. My work is centered on a covert operation such that the flow of information on it in the United States is highly managed, quote-unquote. There may be a relationship between my research and yours. I hope that you will take the time to investigate this topic. So that's what I've done. I have to presume at some point those researchers will receive that communication through public channels in some way. Mm-hmm. And maybe they already have. It's just that I was never able to deliver it to them directly. And so, you know, the point here is that there is a potential connection. We don't know. I don't know if there's a connection. But there's a potential connection between research being done at a main Indian university and what appears to be an honest attempt to present their findings in the scientific community. The detection of completely unexplained cellular structures, which to the best of their ability at this point, mm-hmm. this is at a university level operating, to the best of their ability at this point, has the best resemblance that they can make is that of an erythrocyte, a blood cell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is bizarre, but it's time to get the bizarre business out of the way, and let's get on with it. And when you see this paper, and it is so classic, because, you know, this line, but it's the second line, but the report is meeting with a shower of skepticism.
Mm-hmm.
All right? The response, instead of investigation, is that of skepticism. And the response when I published my paper 3 years ago, it was more than skepticism. You can call it attack.
Yeah, sure was.
At that point. And it is such a classic pattern, and I am hoping at some point that the public realizes that the scientific community plays as many games as anybody in this world.
You bet they do. Got to protect those grants, among other things.
And you now have a case where investigation is warranted at the university level, just as it was warranted at a citizen level from my side several years ago.
Correct. Back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away. Back with you. Clifford Chronicum is here, and I urge you to visit his website and do some reading. And I hope some of you who are listening in India, and that happens, can get word to the people at the university in question and get them at least directed to Clifford's website. All right, Clifford, go ahead.
Thanks very much, Jeff. You know, maybe these structures that they're describing, maybe they do come from outer space, but maybe they don't also. And, you know, these folks are offering a hypothesis because they don't seem to have anything to go on from their side. They appear to be at a loss to explain where this material is coming from at an airborne level that has this organic, possibly, you know, mammalian context to it that nobody can understand. But, you know, whether they are from outer space or not, whether or not there is a connection with my research or not, what you can say is that in both cases, whatever is happening, these are airborne structures that are being found. These are airborne structures that have no suitable explanation whatsoever, that have a cellular constitution that is making no sense to anyone, and has the most bizarre interpretation that you could imagine just about at this point. So that much can be said is similar. And one would certainly hope in a world where the truth is pursued, that an inquiry and investigation would be made.
It's logical.
But you know, are we going to get that? I don't know. But certainly, there is a nexus here. There's a connection being made that shows something on two completely different sides of the planet where some folks found what appear to be something of a similar nature in similar circumstances in a way that defies any normal or common explanation. And it's that type of event that I hope does gradually and cumulatively increase the pressure and the confrontation on this issue at literally a global level. I do know that if not the majority, darn close to it now, the majority of the traffic that comes into my site, which is not even actively being contributed to right now, it's basically primarily a huge archive of research.
Correct.
That traffic is now probably in the main, I guess, probably in the majority or darn close to it on an international level now. Yeah. The traffic has crossed the boundaries of the hoopla that was made in this country for a few years and so aggressively ridiculed and attempts made to discredit those people that were simply seeking an honest explanation for what had been done to their atmosphere. It has crossed those lines, and it's truly that awareness, that 100th monkey, is acting on a global level. I know that. And where and whether or not there'll be any connection between this and that work that I've done or others, I don't know, but I am glad to see the connection because that is what prompts people to think a little bit deeper about the realities of what we're facing here.
Mm-hmm.
What I wanted to do was describe an experiment that I made that's related to this topic in a little more detail. Now, I may have done this briefly. I'm just not sure, but it is so relevant to what we're speaking of now on this article that if I did mention it before, I thought I would revisit it.
No, please do it again, and I do remember it, and it's very important, so go ahead.
And the title itself sort of speaks of the similarity of interpretation that I made on my side as an individual encountering this versus what these researchers over in India are saying. I mean, they're basically saying, you know, this is unheard of, but this is what we see, you know.
Right.
Their title is Skepticism Greets Claim of Possible Alien Microbes, or at least that's, the subtitle you put on it. My title on this paper was called Extraordinary Biological Observations.
Right.
It was straightforward, but I mean, I wouldn't use that word lightly, that's for sure. And this work was done in May of 2004, Now, this article that you have placed up, that they reference it as being from 4 years ago, so presumably 2002, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. And the majority of my articles were also written in 2001, 2002. I was looking at their dates. And then this particular paper, there was a hiatus of a couple of years, and I decided to revisit the subject, just as I revisited the ELF work. I had a gap of probably 2 years, and I went back, and I was asking the question in my own mind, you know, is it possible that this is still going on, you know, in a continuous way?
Right.
And in this case, the question was, is there still this most unusual biological aspect to these atmospheric samples going on? And so I had a couple-year gap, and I revisited, and I did this experiment. The results, to me, they're truly out of a science fiction story. I still, there's been some folks that have talked to me and said, you know, we could use your help in that I'd like you to explain in greater detail what are the ramifications of what you found here. Help us out. And I didn't do it. I didn't hide from it, but I made it brief because it's so big that, I'm not a person that blows a horn. I'm a person who will call attention to something that I think is important. And then I want other people to make their own judgments and own evaluations as to whether or not this topic is important or not. And that's what I did on this paper. And so I kept it to the absolute briefest of details just to describe what actually occurred without a great deal of interpretation given to it. But I did make one interpretation, and I'll mention that again because to me it's still the best I can come up with. And what happened here was after a two-year gap of doing that research with HEPA filters and finding these unusual cellular structures that did have, to the best of my ability, all the criteria, physical properties of an erythrocyte.
Okay. All right, hold on right there. We'll come back. Our final segment with Clifford Carnicom coming up next, and this experiment of his. Well, don't go away. We'll be back. Okay, I think we're back and talking with Clifford Carnicom. Go ahead, Clifford. Let's hear about that amazing discovery you made.
Thank you, Jeff. This is an experiment that we were beginning to describe where I resumed work on investigating the biological aspect of the atmospheric changes. And what happened, this was done in May of 2004, and the purpose of this discussion is to suggest simply to raise the point that there may be a connection between the results of this research and some independent research that has begun, I guess I would say. It looks to me like there's still a whole lot more that would need to be done here.
Right.
But some research that has been done in India that produces in some way some similar results. But this paper I'm describing here, to me, opens up some doors that I don't know that any of us have considered to the degree that it remains and needs to be. And what occurred here was that I again set up the HEPA filter running outdoors. I had done it several times over the years, as well as in other states. But here is a case where you had a HEPA filter, or a HEPA filter being a very fine filter, bringing particles in down to 0.3 of a micron, submicron materials, collecting that, for examination. And, you know, this is now 10 months ago, or at least 9 months ago also. I have to go on memory a little bit. But mm-hmm. I probably ran that filter. It wouldn't be unusual for me to have run that filter up to a six-week period,
right.
Something like that. And then the fibrous material, the paper material of that filter was collected, and extremely small samples of it, of the paper, were placed this time in a different way. These materials were placed in a weak saline solution. And whether you call that my intuition that's operating or whatever you want to call it, I don't exactly know. But in the past, I had always worked either by direct observation or in distilled water. And I have a whole series of tests, you know, that describe those results. But in this occasion, I desired to place this material, these solid material samples, into a very weak salt solution. And I'm sure it's both intuitive as well as analytical, but certainly what was on my mind this time was I had the question, because of the behavior of these structures in the past in distilled water, realizing that there's some type of osmotic imbalance component to it. It was obvious that, first of all, the cellular structures appear to be desiccated. It's the best thing I can come up with.
Mm-hmm.
They appear to be freeze-dried. They have, you know this comment they made in this article about impervious to temperature and storage.
Right,
you know
right.
how they said that?
Sure. Well, that suggests desiccation, doesn't it?
Yeah, storage for years, you know. Well, I ran into this.
Almost like freeze-drying.
Yeah, exactly. I ran into this. And I've eventually come to the conclusion that it appears as though these cellular structures are impervious to temperatures of minus 40 to minus 50 degrees centigrade without a problem, if we accept that they are coming from upper atmospheric levels. In addition, I did some work with boiling water with these structures in order to concentrate the sample. And in both extremes right now, from minus 40 to 100 centigrade, these structures appear to be impervious to that hostile environmental condition. And that's astounding, too. You know, this stuff sounds very strange. It is strange, but it is what is recorded. And that is, it appears to have been on the boiling side. I can take care of that. I don't have the minus 40 here right in a lab, but that's certainly what's happening up at 40,000 feet
right.
as a minimum. These materials appear to be unaffected by those extremes in temperature.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, it's not impossible. At some point, the old exoplanet hypothesis, I mean, that may well come in. But at this point, as you said, it may not be necessary as part of what I'm saying. So I put these in a weak saline solution this time. And the reason was I was curious to investigate, what if these cellular structures were placed in a environment and a medium which is more agreeable to that of the human being? Our body is saline. We approximate salt water in many ways in our biology. And I was curious, how would these structures behave if they were placed in that weak salt solution? And there were changes, and changes I had never seen before. And that is, in the past, anytime I was dealing with either a solid form or all the stains and dyes that I use and all the water, it's distilled water, the cellular structures would take a long time to be affected, first of all, and then eventually they would usually just burst, okay? And in fact, if you look at the behavior of erythrocytes in water, that's exactly what they will do. And some people would say, you know, it's impossible what you're finding, because these cells would blow up in a few seconds if it was truly just erythrocytes. I would agree with that assessment if you were dealing with a let's say, a live form of erythrocyte. But desiccation is an entirely different matter, in my opinion, from what I see.
Right.
And you had this delay. You'd have this delay of up to a half hour, a couple hours, before you would see this transformation take place. But eventually, the cellular structure would be destroyed when you were working with water. It indicates an osmotic imbalance. Once that process of a reconstitution has been resolved. And so the hypothesis, what the heck happens here if we put this stuff in some salt water? And what happened was that these cellular structures, they reconstituted in a what I would call a much more normal fashion. They were fully developed in many cases.
That's kind of scary, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it sure is. It sure is. But, you know, it's what happened. So that's my job, is to report it. Yeah. And what happened is now you had many, many cells. You know, there's a lot of variance in the cells, but you had many, many cells which you could see would reconstitute themselves in a very uniform fashion, very smooth, even size, even shape, and they truly look like well-formed erythrocytes. At that point.
All right, now that what Clifford is telling you is, and I'm sure you've grasped it, the human body is a perfect petri dish to rejuvenate these things or reanimate them. Don't have to go much further than that, folks. You can inhale them and that's it. Freeze-dried, Clifford? Is that another possibility?
Freeze-dried?
Yeah.
Very much a possibility, yeah. I would say. Some form of desiccation.
That was a biological warfare tool that I came across over 10 years ago that had been around for a while, and they were experimenting
with that.
That's
right. It's referenced in that document I have on 1974 hearings. Analogy to a spore would also be appropriate, I think. Mm-hmm. Something which is impervious to extremely hostile environmental conditions, and yet under the proper conditions can become quite lively.
Wow.
And so that's what happened here, and that was, I guess you could say, it was a shock and almost an expectation at the same time.
Yeah.
In the sense that there was a reason that I was driven to do that, and it's because for years I had been brewing on the fact that I know that there's something about these that makes them incredibly impervious to certain conditions.
Yeah, we have coming up on 4 minutes. Do you want to try and wrap it up, or you?
Yeah.
Want to go...
Yes, I'll try to summarize this. And furthermore. The next stage of the experiment involved the idea of a biological medium for growth. In other words, providing a culture medium for them. So I provided not only a saline solution for the original reconstitution, but I also provided a culture medium, a little bit of beef bouillon, agar solution, petri dish business. And I placed the saline structure on those dishes. What happened there, to me, this stuff still just blows my mind, but the cultures, they just took off. These six drops, you can see the pictures, all the pictures are here of what I did.
Right.
This thing just took off in terms of culture growth. You see the six drops of water I put on there, and you see massive radical culture growth take place on this medium. Now, that in itself is the second level of being astounding. The third level and final level is that these cells in that saline biological medium, again, somewhat approximating what one might think would be in the human body, these cells reproduced. I don't have any other way.
Oh, I remember that now.
I don't have any other way of describing it other than this cellular culture just took off. And it's just astounding when you look at it under the microscope what happened here. And you look at some of the pictures at the very end, and I also have what I call control photographs of erythrocytes, human erythrocytes, my own, in comparison to these structures. And all I can say from a visual and a metric side, they are as identical as I can come up with what I have available to me. And I'm not saying they're human erythrocytes, just as these folks from India are saying they don't know exactly what's going on.
But they sure could pass.
But the business of reproduction or growth is an incredible topic, because red blood cells or erythrocytes do not reproduce themselves until you are dealing, and I'm not a biological expert, but I do my work as best I can, but this does not happen until you get into the arena of stem cells. And stem cells, the culture and reproduction of blood cells is the holy grail of biological research. If there's one thing that somebody would like to claim to their fame, believe me, this would be one of them. And this experiment appears to show that type of phenomenon. I'm not saying it is, but it appears to show this type of phenomenon.
Wow. Well, quite a report tonight, Clifford. We'll have to leave it there for this visit. There's still much to talk about.
I always appreciate your willingness, Jeff. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you. It's been extraordinary, and we're much the wiser. Thank you. Take care.
Have a good evening, Jeff.
Okay, good night. Well, much to contemplate. Please go to Clifford's website and spend some time availing yourself of his hard work and his brilliant work on our behalf. All right, we'll pause.